Hey, here we are again at Old School Guns, the podcast that gives you the information on the gun media, the gun culture, Second Amendment issues, and answers your questions and answers. And let's see, first thing today is, I don't know if you saw it a few days ago, but Donald Trump came out and said, hey, we shouldn't have all these different gun laws, and we shouldn't have gun bans. We should be able to move across state borders, and no gun should be illegal in one place and legal in another. So a gun ban should go. And I thought that was a absolutely great position for him to take. He's also for just the national recognition of concealed carry permits, where I have one in the state of Missouri, then I could go carry it in the state of Oregon or the state of California or the state of New York or Maine or Florida. So those are great positions to have. And I certainly am very pleased to hear him say that. I am kind of a little bit skeptical that it's taken this long. This should have been something that we had right up front. I mean, I said it in another podcast that we've seemed to have wasted 2 years of time when we had at least nominal control of the House, the Senate, and we have the presidency. We should have pushed this through, and if we needed to trade bump stocks to get some of this, hey, so much the better. I really think when it comes to gun bans, that the federal government could use its powers under the Interstate Commerce Clause to basically say we can't have different gun bans that are for AR-15s here, there, and everywhere, that it needs to be uniform because essentially guns travel across state lines, and therefore it is the jurisdiction of the federal government to regulate them and not the states. So I definitely think that that is a very legitimate position, and I'm really glad that he's taken it. One of the things that kind of gives me pause is, you know, those are great issues, and I'm very happy with that. But I still get the feeling that, you know, the NRA has always been run by what I consider to be FUDs, and that's a not very nice term for people who are just in the hunting, and you could extend that into certain shooting sports. The problem with that is that it leaves out a lot of us gun owners who are gun enthusiasts, who want a variety of weapons, who want different weapons. And hey, we understand the difference between Class 3 and regular semi-auto type weapons. We understand that there's the Federal Firearms Act of 1934 and 1968, and we would like to see those laws basically amended to make it easier for us law-abiding citizens to collect and to shoot a variety of different weapons and basically to have them. But, you know, that's not really the agenda of hunters. So FUDs worry about hunting. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's always been basically a mystery to me that, you know, you get a rifle like the AR-15, a great rifle, and it is what it is. It was designed for intermediate cartridge. It does 5.56 exceptionally well. It's exceptionally accurate. And I really think that, you know, to go beyond that in caliber really kind of wastes your time. I mean, it just does what it does exceptionally well. So why is there always a movement to bring it out in some other caliber? You know, like let's have two something something else, you know, or the 300 blackout or this or that or the other thing. And the answer is there's experimentation, and that's a good thing. 300 blackout, I think it's not a very good cartridge unless you're doing something with it suppressed, in which case it's an exceptional cartridge. It could also provide a low recoil alternative for people who want to hunt but don't want to carry something like a 30-30 or a 30-06, something that's lower recoil. I kind of get that. And for close range shots, I think it's very adequate. But you know, when you come to some of these 6.5 cartridges and other things that are in ARs, I always thought that that's an appeal to the FUD community, that basically these tactical rifles can be used in hunting, and therefore this kind of brings you to our side. I'm not sure that's really the case. I mean, I don't know that, you know, I personally think FUD calibers in a rifle like an AR is a mistake. I mean, they're expensive. They're going to be, most of the factory ammo is not going to be tailored for an AR. And, you know, frankly, I just think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of my time. Other people see it differently. I do like the AR-10 and 7.62 NATO. I think that's a great cartridge in a great gun. I mean, it's absolutely lightweight. And if you're willing to put up with the additional recoil, it's something definitely out there. I would love to get my hands on a Brownells BRN-10, but that's not in the cards for right now. And there's a lot of great 7.62 NATO 308 semi-auto rifles out there. So, you know, that's really another cartridge that can be used very successfully for hunting in some of these platforms. But really, are someone going to carry an M1A hunting? You know, they might. If they just like the rifle, they might. But chances are they're probably not. They're going to get a Remington 700 in 308 and do their thing. So making sure that we have the right kind of people on the NRA board speaking the right message is very, very important. And when we bump into these people, you know, when they're holding Friends of the NRA event or they're out visiting in your area, you know, go down there and respectfully, you know, kind of tell them who you are, what you're into, and give them the kind of a priority list of things we'd like to see happen. And the H.W. Bush assault weapons executive order bans, you know, let's get rid of those. Let's just get rid of them. We also need to get rid of Section 922R. We also need to get rid of short-barreled rifles as a NFA-controlled item. They need to be taken off the NFA. And all these things really need to happen to reform the gun laws and push the pendulum far enough along so that if the Democrats ever win again, that they won't be able just to do something horrible to us like they did with the 94 assault. So with that, we congratulate President Trump, and we're very, very happy that he's taken that position. So that's some great news. Let's see, the usual shenanigans from the clownish Democratic candidates. Joe Biden says that you're not entitled to own a gun. That's complete hogwash, and it just shows you what an idiot this guy really is. If you're a law-abiding citizen, you are entitled and permitted and have the right to own a gun. Now, the government's not going to give it to you. You have to go out and earn the money for it and pay for it, but you have that right. You have the right to own a gun. Joe Biden is wrong. Joe Biden gave out, you know, remember after Sandy Hook, that, you know, this whole buy a shotgun thing, and, you know, if you hear noise, just shoot it up in the air. The things that if you actually did it, you would be charged for reckless endangerment and everything else if you actually followed what that fool said. And I know that he's from Delaware. I don't know much about Delaware, but I can't believe it's packed with sportsmen. So I don't believe he's a sportsman. And if there is probably, if he's got one of those lame pictures of himself with a shotgun like the one Obama took, let's see it. But I don't think it's out there. I think Joe is a man who has basically the man time forgot. And here he is trying to make himself relevant in 2019, when basically he topped out in 2008, you know, he was just kind of a convenient pick for Barack Obama to run for president. And I think personally, if the Democratic Party chooses him, they will be committing political suicide. But I think they're going to commit suicide in this election anyway. And the reason I say that is the guy who's the front runner right now is almost never the nominee. That's changed a few times, but that's a pretty sound rule of thumb that the first front runner is never the nominee. And I also think that the Democrats are cagey enough to think that, okay, even if they lose 2020, that 2024 is really where the game's going to be. There won't be an incumbent president running. They won't have to run against the media juggernaut and the command of the airwaves that an incumbent president has, especially a popular one like Donald Trump. So I think what you're going to see is they will probably run somebody like Sanders or some other socialist. And when they lose, that gives them an excuse to expunge the socialists from their party. They'll get rid of Ocasio-Cortez. I think Omar and Tlaib will also be given their walking papers. These have generated a lot of bad press for the Democrats. And I think a lot of independents and Americans who are in the middle of the two parties are looking at them and they don't like what they see. So that's going to be a very, very interesting turn of events. We'll see how that transpires. There's not really any other news. All the other midgets are basically being pretty quiet. I'm still waiting to find one of those imported AR-15s that Kamala Harris is going to go after and stop the importation of. You know, that always begs the question of, these people just don't know what they're talking about. You know, if you're going to say something about firearms, you know, just say something, have at least an informed opinion. That's the problem, is that they have no idea what they're actually even talking about. And it's like my friend Sewagewell, Eric Sewagewell from California. I saw one deal on television where he went into a gun shop in Maine or someplace. And, you know, he couldn't believe that everybody who bought a weapon there had to get a background check. He just, you know, now he knows better. But he just seemed incredulous that happened. And it was like, oh, wow. So he didn't even do basic research before he spouts off his mouth and makes what I consider to be terrorist threats against gun owners. When you're talking about slapping people in jail when you don't know the law yourself, when you're talking about, even as laughable as it was, using nuclear weapons on gun owners, you know, it just shows he doesn't even know what he's talking about. He doesn't even have command of the basic information, of the basic facts, something that we would never tolerate from a school child. We would correct them. We would say, no, that's not the case. You haven't done your homework. You haven't done the research. And yet these people get a pass all the time. They run their mouths, and especially on the gun issue, they have no idea what they're talking about. Remember a few years ago when one of the Democrats in the House, who was the head of their gun control, their unofficial gun control committee, basically she thought that, well, when we use up all the 30-round magazines, they'll be gone. She didn't realize that a 30-round magazine is fired, and then you can reload the magazine and use it again and again and again. She thought once they were put in the rifle and the 30 rounds were expired, the magazine was no good anymore. Again, somebody who doesn't even have the very basic knowledge. We would never trust anybody with such a lack of knowledge to make traffic laws or to regulate automobile safety. Somebody who didn't even understand how an automobile worked, didn't understand the basic rules of the road. We would never trust somebody like that. So that it shows you, this is why we cannot trust these people. And it really shows them that they think they're giants, but they have feet of clay. They really are not worth anything. They're really not. And if they can't and won't do the basic research on firearms, what makes you think they know anything about any other issue? And, you know, proof of that was Nancy Pelosi. Well, we have to pass Obamacare to know what's in it. Well, you know, an idiot, a robot can do that. We expect people who we elect to be lawmakers and people who are elected to be lawmakers to act in a responsible manner. If not, give up the job, resign, and go back and work in Baskin Robbins or wherever it is you work, where everything is rosy and happy, and you don't have to do anything except, you know, scoop ice cream. That's just the very, very basic fundamentals of being a lawmaker. They seem to have lost. So that's enough of the Second Amendment. Let's see if we have anything in the gun media. One of the things in the gun media, we don't have too much of it today, is, you know, it just, they're inundated, the content creators on YouTube and Patreon and all these places, they're inundating us with content. I noticed that a couple of the ones that I actually like the most and support, InRange TV and Forgotten Weapons, they're now into putting out a video. Forgotten Weapons more than InRange, but InRange is putting out a lot of kind of content that's not really content. You know, it's you know, the Finnish guys who I love because I'm of Finnish descent myself, you know, the kind of, they're going through their match with a helmet cam, and, you know, that's kind of okay, but it's already a match that they've already done a video on and kind of done the analysis on, and it's really not that great a content. Some of the stuff they're just filling up the time with. Same thing, Forgotten Weapons, I think, is going into a little more of the exotica. You know, this is a one-time prototype, and, you know, while that can be interesting for some, I think that it's a very low payoff thing. I would like to see higher quality content and maybe a little bit less, you know, sacrifice the quantity for some quality, and I think that they'd do a lot better. I think that they are great, though. I think if it was coming to match design and it was coming to, you know, how to do matches, and actually I think the, especially Carl, has got some real talent. He could do some training courses, I think, that would probably be very, very good and very instructive. I think that those guys are absolutely great. I don't agree with them all the time. I disagree with not a lot, but some of the things they say, because frankly, there's not any military experience there. So don't tell me what an infantryman needs when I've been an infantryman and I know that what they're saying is really not the case, or it's a very general statement that's almost useless. So anyway, I'll call them out on that when I see it. But that's the kind of the gun media, the lots of content out there, and it's almost impossible to keep up with, really is. So those are the main things I wanted to hit on that. A couple of the other things we can do today are some questions and answers. And the first question I have is, why do people hate the Desert Eagle pistol so much? And I thought that was a very funny question when I was asked it. I immediately wrote it down, made sure I had it. The Desert Eagle pistol, in some ways it is really hated. It used to be a lot worse. I grew up in the Magnum handgun era, and that was dominated by Smith & Wesson revolvers, Magnums. You know, Ruger was in there a little bit, and kind of Colt came in. They always had the Python, then they came in a little later with the Anaconda. And so there was always these Magnum revolvers. And, of course, Taurus had, you know, they were kind of the cheapo Magnums. And Ruger had the Super Black Hawk, and then they had the regular Black Hawk in a variety of calibers, including 357 and 41. But when the Desert Eagle came out, first of all, it was an auto pistol, and the Magnum handgun guys were revolver guys, and the thing that really chapped their backsides were, A, it came out in 44, which was their favorite, you know, most powerful handgun in the world caliber, so they that really kind of aggravated them. And then the next thing was, when it came out in 50 A&E, they about had kittens, because it was 50 and it was bigger and it was a half an inch. And they were really upset about it. And then when they came out with the Desert Eagle in the titanium gold finish, it was christened a pimp gun and everything else. And there have been some pretty flamboyant finishes on the Desert Eagle. I have one in black oxide, but I do think that the tiger stripe one would be cool. Now they have a hard chrome one that's the white tiger stripe. And, you know, those things are kind of fun. But they did kind of offend a lot of people. And a lot of guys said not a good word, not a single good word about the Desert Eagle, even though they weren't the first semi-automatic Magnum handgun. There was the ill-fated auto mags. which were, you know, pretty well designed and very sleek and good-looking guns. But, you know, capitalization of the company and manufacturing and quality control, all those things really conspired that the companies that made it went in and out of business, and nobody, I think today they're trying to bring them back on a custom basis, but I think they're a little bit dated now, and I don't think people are buying. There's always going to be a market for Magnum handguns, but I don't know if bringing a new one to market with such a niche is really going to be something. You know, the same thing, they keep trying to bring back the Wildey, you know, and one of the guys who actually was manufacturing it said, every time the Charles Bronson Death Wish 4 came on, their orders would see a measurable increase. So, you know, those were out there, but people hated the Desert Eagle, and they still dish rag it and talk about it. But I will say the Desert Eagle is the most accurate 44 Magnum I have ever seen or fired, and it absolutely will put all of its shots in. It'll cut a big ragged hole at 25 yards, and that's with me shooting, you know, that's not with some super pro guy. The Desert Eagle is a great shooting gun. It's ponderous, it's big. It was never designed to be a personal defense gun, which is another reason people dish rag it and get down on it. It was always designed to be a hunting, really predominantly a hunting handgun, and it was designed to be a very accurate, powerful plinker. If you like shooting steel, shooting silhouette, it came in when steel silhouette shooting, you know, with the cutouts of the animals was still a thing, was still a big thing. Then you could get the 10-inch barrel, and you could, you know, knock over those silhouettes with it, and it took powerful rounds. So it's not like it was overpowered to knock down the ram at 200 yards. Yeah, you needed that 10-inch barrel, and you know, the 50 A&E would have enough kinetic energy to knock that baby over, you know. And so, you know, it was useful for all that, and it's useful for handgun hunting. Plus, people just enjoyed having it because it's cool. People enjoy cool things, and they really want to own it. And so they had it. That's why I had one. I just thought it would be a fun gun to own because my credo is firearms should be fun. If they're not fun, why do we even have them? Why go out to the range? And it's been a lot of fun to own, and it's been something that always, you know, my shooting buddies and all that really enjoy. It's different, and we really enjoy it. But yes, it did come in for quite a bit of hate, and the hate is kind of still out there. But you know, it's a great gun, and if you want one, get it, enjoy it, and they are not cheap. They are not cheap at all, but you're really getting quality. I mean, the quality that goes into it, the engine, not just the engineering, but just the quality of the materials and everything is really fantastic. And if you buy one and understand what it is, you'll be very, very pleased. But don't buy it thinking that it's going to be what you see in the movies, because that's really never what the pistol was intended for. So that's it on the Desert Eagle. Okay. Oh, here's one we were just talking about in range. Do you agree with in range TV that semi-auto Thompson SMGs, and those are actually the semi-automatic Thompson rifles, are a cancer? Yeah, I remember him making that thing and not really thinking too much of it at the time. And then somebody else who has one asked me that question. Hey, do you think these guys are correct in their assessment of the Thompson? And I have to say that what they said is hogwash. They obviously have not dealt with them very much, if at all. And those guys now, you know, they're making enough money off this. They're buying their own Class 3 machine guns, which they can do in Arizona. And so therefore the semi-automatic Thompson is not going to be a very exciting gun for them. What niche does it fill? Why is it even there? Well, in the real reason it's there is because in many states you cannot own a Class 3 weapon, so you can own a semi-automatic. Guess what? That's the only Thompson you're going to be able to own. Can't own the fully automatic one in some states. And if, even if you do live in a state where you can, there's two other problems. One is these things are costing money. They cost about, well, a 1928 will cost you about probably $30,000 is my guess. And I think an M1 goes a little cheaper. M1A1 will go a little cheaper. That's about $20,000. That's still a lot. That's a car for most people. And that's a lot of money to spend on a toy, even though they've been going up in price. They're not a bad investment. But that's a lot of money to put on something recreational. The other situation is you can't find a whole lot of places that'll let you shoot them. Now, if you have your own ranch, hey, you're good to go. You're good to hook. But a lot of us have to shoot at public shooting ranges, and most of them forbid fully automatic fire, so therefore your Thompson would not be, you wouldn't be able to use it in fully automatic fire. But semi-automatic ones are a lot of fun. First of all, they're built with just this craftsmanship, and they're beautifully done, whether it's the West Hurley or now the successor Carr Arms has the auto ordnance corporate rights to all the copyrights to all the auto ordnance markings and everything. And I actually have one of each. They're both great. They're a lot of fun. I have SBR'd them. I live in a state that allows me to do that. And so I did the federal paperwork. They look just like the real thing, but they are semi-automatic. But they are a lot of fun. And it's just cost-wise, it's as close as I'm going to be able to get to it. So yes, they are a lot of fun. They definitely are not a cancer. They are what they are, and you have to accept that it's not going to be fully auto. And you know, someday if they ever open up the NFA, I will probably have egg on my face because everybody will be getting fully automatic ones, and mine will be semi-automatic, and I'll be trying to figure out how to legally convert them. But until that time, these really scratch my Thompson itch. They were attainable for me. The other Thompsons are not. So they're great guns, and they were a lot of fun. All right, we have a related question. And that related question is right here. And it's, have you heard of Zoot shooting? And what do you think about it? Well, I have to say that this is related to the Thompsons, and that's why I brought it. That's why I searched down the page here and got it. Yes, I am a member of the American Zoot Shooting Association. I went to the national, world, whatever the match was, which had about 30 people in 2012. I have to say, and I've been through shooting matches of different kinds over the years. The most fun I ever had at a match was at this Zoot shooting match. It was the biggest kick in the pants you could imagine. It was great. We had such a good time. My sides hurt from laughing so much because we were talking, having a great time. We were also shooting some great guns, 1911s. I had my semi-automatic Thompson there. I also had a pump 12 gauge. And we had an outstanding, great time. I really enjoyed it. I actually won a couple of the side matches, and I think I came in second on another one too. That was kind of fun. Basically, it's pre-1950 weapons or copies thereof. So it's kind of an extension of the cowboy shooting thing. And where it really divides itself from cowboy shooting is because a lot of the weapons are semi-automatic. There's no downloading. There's no wimpy little trail boss loads where, you know, I've heard some of these 38, you know, they load trail boss in the 38 long Colt brass and or 38 Colt brass, I think it's correctly called. And it literally almost sounds like a cap gun. You don't even need hearing protection. Hearing protection you should always have, but, you know, it's just this pop, 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 pop with no recoil. But Zoot shooting does not have that simply because to function the semi-automatic pistols and the carbines, you have to have basically, you know, regular power loads. So that's a lot of fun. It was great. The camaraderie was great. I loved it. The only downside was they held it in Colorado, which to a flatlander like me was a problem because, I got my kind of out of shape self up there, and the air was thin, and I was getting some headaches, and I at the end of the day, I was all wore out because I wasn't used to the altitude. So, it was absolutely great. There still is a website out there. There's also on Cass City, there's a forum there. I did get some disturbing news. I don't think they're going to hold a world championship this year. They're not going to hold that match, which is a shame because I was planning on going back. But I love dressing in, and I don't have authentic 30s clothes I wear during this, but I wear a white shirt, a tie, a vest, a fedora. I bought one of those inexpensive wool felt fedoras. Looks the part, looks really good. And I had a pair of old shoes I bought in a thrift store, a set of Oxfords. And it really was a lot of fun. Really was a lot of fun. I think I actually had pants I bought in Walmart. They were just kind of black pants that matched the vest and the other thing I had. So, the costuming didn't cost anything. I think I had less than $100 in the costume. I think the hat was like 30 some bucks. The shirt I had, the tie I had, the pants were like 20 bucks maybe. The shoes were $3 in a thrift store. And the holsters and everything else I had. So it wasn't even $100. It's probably $75. And it was a lot of fun. Oh, I did have a suit jacket that had been that I had tailored. I bought it in a thrift store. I think I bought it for like $5 or $6, and it cost me like $20 to have it altered. So I guess I'm up around $100 in all this. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, I really enjoyed it. And it's what shooting really should be. It's what shooting really should be. And I understand why people are drawn to Cass and some of these other things. I hope that they hold it again this year because I was planning on going. Last couple years, I had a ruptured Achilles tendon and a few other things kind of kept me out of the had a wedding, at the same time. And there's a wedding I had to attend and all this. So, there's been a few things that have kept me for like 4 or 5 years from attending. Two injuries, a wedding, and I think work for another time. So anyway, that was the I think we were purchasing a house. So, all these things kind of keep you from doing it, but I was definitely gonna do it this year, and now I hear it's not gonna happen. So hopefully they will change. Hopefully that will change. Where do you buy ammo? I'll tell you, I buy ammo a variety of places. The place I probably buy the majority of just the junk ammo I shoot is Walmart. You can get that Windsteel down there and all that. And it's usually convenient. If I have something that I just want to buy something. They seem to have pretty good prices, so if they have what I need, I kind of buy it there. They actually sell some Federal 6.5 Creedmoor with Berger bullets, which are excellent. They shoot really well in my 6.5 Creedmoor bolt gun. But yeah, I buy that 22, that kind of stuff. I buy at Walmart now that it's available again. I buy it down there at Walmart. What I buy when I'm looking for specialty ammo, like 38 Smith and Wesson, the older cartridge, not 38 Special, but 38 Smith and Wesson. I usually have to buy that at some place like Cabela's if they have it. Some of the more odd stuff I have to buy from Cabela's. Some of the stuff I like to buy in bulk, I do from SG Ammo. SG Ammo, they're on the net. They got good prices, great variety, quick shipping, and what I like is I order it and literally the same day I get a notice that it's being shipped. So I really like that. And I'm able to get, stuff like the 545 by 39 and some of the other stuff that you just don't see on the shelves, even at a Cabela's. So I do use SGA ammo. I've also used Buffalo Arms for some of the really odd stuff that I shoot. That's like 351 Winchester, and I usually buy components for that. I usually load that myself. But they do have some loaded. It will cost you, but they have it, and you can go through 20 rounds of that pretty quick. The other thing I bought from them, I think, is Martini Henry brass. Yeah, the 577 450 Martini Henry brass. I bought some of that when there was some reasonably priced stuff available, and reasonably priced meaning about $50 for 20 rounds. Since then, though, I've self-taught myself how to make it out of 24 gauge shotgun shells, and so that's something we can talk about in the future. And those cost me about $1 a round. So the brass casings I buy for those from Midway, and I shape them myself. And I think there are 25 of them cost me like $24 plus shipping, something $23 or $24 plus shipping. So it's just over a dollar, just a few pennies over a dollar a piece. And I usually get them when I'm ordering something else anyway, so the shipping is really doesn't matter very much. But that's where I buy ammo. I think they're good guys. They do a very, very good job for me. So I would definitely recommend that's where you go. But I don't really buy all my ammo in one place because no single place has everything I need. So I have to go to a variety of places. And so those four places though cover the bets. Pretty much cover the bets. Well, hey, that's it for another podcast. I'm glad to give you any kind of information and always glad to answer questions. So if you have any questions, put them in the comments and we'll be sure to get to them. If not next time, then the time after. This is Old School Guns out.